Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Eclectic Visionary Show with Judy and Judy Ann. I'm your host, Judy Colantuono, and here's my co-host, Judy Ann Cannizzaro. Say hi.
Good evening, everyone.
So tonight, we have a guest, Roberta Grimes, and she's going to be talking to us about the afterlife and about dying, and Judy Ann's going to give us some background and some introduction on her.
Roberta is an author, she's a mother, she's an attorney, and she had an afterlife experience, and ever since then she's done a lot of research. She's written many books on the subject, and I'm going to introduce her and let her start talking, and then we're going to ask her questions. Roberta, why don't you tell everybody all about yourself and your incredible life?
My goodness, where do I start? Hi, good evening, everyone.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Good evening.
I hardly know where to begin. I had an extraordinary experience as a child, and that started me on a quest to understand reality. And the best way I could find to sort of come to understand what had happened to me when I was 8 and again at 20, was to study the afterlife. And I found that we have a tremendous amount of evidence of what happens at death and after death that most people are just not aware of. A lot of the best of it was produced between about, 1895 and 1950. And it's all there for the reading, and I just spent decades reading it.
Can you give us maybe just a brief overview of what happened to you when you were 8 and 20?
When I was 8, I woke up in the middle of the night, and I knew there was no God, and I was terrified because I had been a good little Christian child, and this was very scary. And in the middle of my terror, there was this white, bright white light in the room. It was in the room, so I remember that room 60 years later as if this had just happened. And a young male boy said, "You wouldn't know what it is to have me if you didn't know what it is to be without me. I will never leave you again."
Wow.
And of course, when you're 8, everything is surprising, so nothing is surprising. I thought, oh, isn't it handy if you forget they remind you that there was a God? And I went back to sleep. But I never forgot that experience. I kept thinking it was something they would just sort of tell you about, like eventually you learn how to drive a car and other things, the facts of life. Well, I would learn about those experiences, but of course I never asked a question, so I never got an answer. Even in college, I majored in religion in college, thinking by then they'll surely tell you what that was, but you don't ask a question, you don't get the answer. So
that's right.
Why it happened again at 20. I just saw the light and heard the same voice say, "I will never leave you." So I wanted to know what that was and where it came from and what was going on. I mean, probably much more than what we can see, so what the heck is it? And that's what started me on this journey.
It's an incredible journey. I wanted to ask you a couple of questions because I was born, I'm a medium, so I was born with these gifts, and I know my experiences. But when this happened to you, you said you went right back to sleep, but did you tell your parents? And
nope.
You didn't?
No,
you just kept
people who have
yourself.
These experiences don't talk about them.
Okay.
Just as people didn't, until Raymond Moody's book, people who had near-death experiences didn't talk about them. There are by the time people reach their 50s or 60s, many people have had extraordinary experiences, I've discovered. I didn't share this till I was 45 when my mother had a similar experience, and that was the first time I understood I wasn't a freak. And, of course, they're in the Bible, too. There's at least two of them in the Bible, which I didn't think about until after I talked to my mother about it.
But you found that you had this common ground, and then you can open up the subject.
Yes, and so then I started talking about it to people, and I found, I think maybe 2% or something of people have had these experiences. I've found a few others who've had them, but this is a more unusual kind of spiritual experience than many of the others, and it's, you know, rather spectacular, actually. The light is brilliant white.
That light, that blinding light. It's the kind of light you can describe it, but yet you can't. It's light. You know it as light, but yet it's almost like no light you've ever seen because it's incredible. and I...
Yeah, it comes from what we think of as the afterlife level. It's the light that permeates those levels. It's much brighter than sunlight, and especially at the upper levels. But I didn't know that, of course, till years later after I did all this research.
Of course not.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I wanted to just share something really quickly. My father, when he was 16, was shot in the head by accident. And he died. It would have been 1943, I think, when this happened.
Oh.
And he was clinically dead for several minutes. And he came to in the hospital. This was in the middle of the country in Mississippi. It was totally an accident. But he died at the age of 52, still had the bullet in his head. But anyway, he described everything that happened to him. He described that he came out of his body and he was floating and he watched everything happen. But he never talked about that. He never talked about it. It wasn't until he was much older. It just because people didn't talk about those kinds of things. People didn't share that information. It was a very interesting experience though. But and his identical twin brother, my uncle, confirmed everything that my father said. He said that you described exactly what happened. So
Because we don't want, it's such an extraordinary thing. We don't want anyone to think we're crazy. We don't want anyone to disparage and say that didn't really happen, or you imagined it, because we know it was real.
Absolutely.
So, we're protective of the experience, and at the same time, we really want to know. It just made me so hungry to know what's going on, to understand the truth, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Are you familiar with the book by Eben Alexander, The Doctor, Proof of Heaven?
Oh, sure.
Yes. Because there's more and more books right now that are coming on. You see them. They're getting more notoriety. They're out there, and people are reading them. People are actually talking about them now. It's just...
You're absolutely right. Near-death experiences, of course, are different from actually dying. People who have a near-death experience and go back, by definition, don't go to the same place that the dead go. In fact, they often will come to a point in their, if it's an extensive near-death experience, and they're told if you go any farther, you won't be able to go back because they're entering the area where the dead are. But it's happening so quickly, as you say. When The Fun of Dying was first published in 2010, and I started to, you know, give talks and things, I would see a lot of blank faces, and people would be surprised and ask kind of dumb questions. But by about 2012, the audiences were so much more in tune. I just got back from a trip to San Jose where I did three speaking engagements. By now, everybody, every audience is into it. It's astonishing how fast it's happening.
Well, there's a shift. There's a shift.
Yeah.
You can feel it. You can feel it culturally. There is a shift.
You know what happens when you have something like this? You'll have people that you have that blank stare in the audience, but a lot of times, because I know with my own work, then afterwards they come secretly to me, and they start opening up. You know, it's like they didn't want to say it in front of everyone else. But I think that's happening less and less, because I think it's out there. It's almost like,
yes.
You know, I always say, whether you like Oprah, you dislike Oprah, I once said she made it okay to be me. That's the way I look at it.
There are a number, you're right, of sort of cultural touchstones that have just elevated our ability to understand that these things are acceptable and okay, and be willing to talk about them and be excited actually about them,
not with underground groups. I noticed I was reading a little bit in your book, and I saw the different quotes, and there was always a quote from Jesus, which, you know what, me as a Catholic and going to Catholic school for 12 years, but yet having these abilities, you know, it was almost like that was my safety net. It's okay. If Jesus said it, it's okay. So I think, you know, it's like the people who start saying, well, don't you believe in God? I mean, of course. Why wouldn't I? None of this suggests that there is no God. So you're
in fact,
by
it helps
putting
us understand
that.
What God is. God is not the Christian God is a obviously a man-made thing because the actual God has no human failings.
No.
Which certainly the Christian God does, and the real God doesn't have a beard or anything human about it. But that coming to understand how infinitely loved we all are by this vast energy, which is what God actually is just enormously comforting. One of the things I try to make sure everybody, whenever I speak, I try to make sure people understand you yourself are infinitely loved.
Yes.
Infinitely so. And your mind is eternal. It never began, it never will end.
So, Roberta, what... Oh, I'm sorry, what...
We're getting a little feedback.
We're getting a little echo. Sorry, we had a little bit of technical difficulties tonight. So, Roberta, what... So, what happens after you pass over? What insights have you got for us?
Well, a lot. To begin with, the process of dying... I mean, obviously, it's a universal event. We all die.
That's
the process
right.
of dying is meant to be loving and supported. We have people around us. Virtually nobody dies alone, and our loved ones are with us, or and sometimes advanced beings as well, sometimes our pets. You know, we leave our bodies. It's a wonderful feeling to leave our bodies. People who have done it say it's actually physically pleasurable to leave your body. And be, I mean, basically, you were trapped in a boat anchor. Let's face it, a dying body is an object.
Right.
Not a place
and
to
it's
be.
Holding you down.
Now, and you're young, free, happy, healthy. You feel fantastic. All of a sudden, it's a great feeling. And then as you leave where your death scene, you know, you go to a place, right in the same place. It's all in the same place. It's just at a higher vibratory rate. But there's a whole new solid reality that you pick up with your mind just as easily as you breathe. It's just so easy and beautiful and comforting, and you feel so loved. That's one of the things. I mean, you feel that love once you're out of your body. There's no barrier between you and the infinite love of God then. It's wonderful.
Well, you're now, going home.
You're going home, yes.
That's
absolutely
what it
right.
is. You're going home, so you're going to a place that you know. You're going
yeah.
back to where you came from. So once you,
that's right.
you're released from that shell, that heavy, heavy albatross, and you know you're back. You're back where you came from. So of course there's a remembrance. It's you.
Yes, because our minds are eternal. We never began. We never will end. So we spend
yeah.
like 99.999% of eternity. At home, where we come here for just a really bad day at school, basically, or a rough day at the gym, and that's it. And then we go home again.
Right.
And, flex, and, you know, learn to flex our loving and forgiving muscles. That's all it's about.
Now, do you, so once we pass over, are there different levels that we go through?
Yes.
Okay.
The easiest way to think about how this works is to think about television channels. If we had,
okay.
you know, in the room where you are, there are like 100 television channels. And if you have a TV, you can turn it on and pick up channel 2. And maybe that's what we're tuned to right now. You're tuned to the Earth level of the Earth channel and that particular body on the Earth channel. When you die, you just tune to a slightly higher vibratory rate and you pick up a whole new solid reality, which is like a channel. In the afterlife, there are at least 6 below the source level, of which we're aware. The lowest is still higher than the material level, but it's pretty bad. It's what Jesus called the outer darkness, where there's wailing and gnashing of teeth. It's the punishment level, and everybody's
so,
there.
Hang on one second, Roberta. Let me clarify. So you said 6 levels below the source level.
Yeah.
And I'm assuming source level, you're meaning God.
No.
No.
The source. The source level is what we would think of as God. I usually don't use the term because then people have in their minds this, you know, thunderbolts and beards and the throne and all of that, none of which has anything to do with the actual God. So I usually use mind or consciousness or source. But between that sort of top level in terms of the highest vibratory rate and what we think is the lowest, which is the material level,
okay.
There are probably infinite gradations, but they shade into six primary after-death levels.
Okay.
The lowest of which, higher than this level, higher than the Earth level, the lowest of the after-death levels is what Jesus called the outer darkness, the punishment level. Above that is a better level. It's not really punishment, but it's not really fun either. Levels 3 through 5 are what the Vikings called the Summerland, and I call it the Summerland because, again, I don't want to use a religious term, which is what heaven is. But they're beautiful. They're earth-like. They're very, of course, solid. People who live there say, that's reality. This is the illusion part. But it's just beautiful, beautiful, and very, I don't know, it's hard to even express. There are colors that you have not seen here because they're beyond the visible light spectrum. Beautiful sound, lovely energy. It's always daylight and 78 degrees and just beautiful. The sixth level, which is just below the source, is called the causal or mental level. Or I know someone who lives there, and he calls it the teaching level. Very advanced beings are there, and they generally teach both in the afterlife and on Earth. And that's the way it is. These are huge, by the way. They're probably, each of them is probably the size of the universe. It's less crowded there than it is here.
Those are like the light beings. They're the light beings?
Yes, the level 6 beings, if they appear on Earth, exactly right. They're what we would think of as beings of light, exactly.
Because I could see them. I see them. I want to ask you something.
It's rare to see them, but if you do, I mean, my mother, who is totally unpsychic, was visited by one. She had no idea what it was that had visited her when she described it. My jaw was on the floor. They're usually very tall, sort of androgynous almost, but vaguely male or female, and they glow with color. Usually, I think, they're usually yellow, but not always, yellowish, goldish, kind of. But there probably are other colors, too. That's just all I've ever heard described.
I'm seeing like an opalescence. That's what I see. That's the colors that I'm seeing. An opalescence.
Oh, okay,
color.
Well, that's good. That's new information.
And they're very fluid. You know, it's almost like if you took your hand and you started waving, like kind of doing the wave with it, that's just how I see them right now. That's how they're showing themselves to me, you know, when I'm talking. But I wanted to ask you something. I read this before. Did you ever see the movie with Robin Williams, What Dreams May Come?
Uh-huh.
Someone once said, I read this, you know, it was somebody's book or something, where they said that was a very close interpretation of the afterlife, because you saw these, all of a sudden he was in this field and there were these colors that were indescribable, and it was music that was indescribable. And even Eben Alexander, in his book, he also, maybe it was in his book where I read that, and he described that same thing too. And he may have talk of the beings, these beyond any stretch of the imagination. I don't think you could even put a height on them. They're just, I see them right now.
They tend to be very tall. But again, remember, he had a near-death experience. So what happened, what he saw could very well have been what he expected to see.
Yes.
And if he had seen that movie, he would have probably seen things that were related to that movie. That's why the Heaven Is For Real, which is the little three-year-old Christian boy.
Yeah.
He had some extraordinary experiences in his near-death experience that have nothing whatsoever to do with the actual afterlife. But they gave him experiences which would comfort him and which would not be confusing to him when he went back to his Christian pastor father.
So let me ask you, Roberta, so we pass over... And we cross over, and we go into that. Do we go right into that first level? You said that first level is kind of more of the punishment level. Do we go into that first level?
No. We usually enter at level 3, which is the lowest of the 3 Summerland levels. The only people who enter at level 1, the lowest, are people who are feeling so guilty about things that they're just hopelessly feeling terrible about something, and they immediately just slap themselves right into level one. That's relatively rare, apparently. Nearly all of us make it to level three. We then go through a life review, among other things, and that life review lets us review our whole lifetime.
Yeah.
And not only how we felt, but how we made everybody else in our lives feel that whole, our whole lifetime long. Then we're asked to forgive ourselves for the things we did in our lives. And if we can't forgive ourselves, our vibratory rate slows so that we can't hold level three anymore. We're in level two. We can't hold level two. We put ourselves into level one. It's almost, there's a physics associated with it, which is pretty implacable.
Well, you know, I've always heard also that, I mean, there has to be some different levels because there are people, like you get like a Son of Sam or a Hitler, and you look at people like that, most people say, well, is he going to the same place? Because, you know, there is no hell for me. So it's like I thought there were different levels that they had to go to. Like, not everyone was in the same place. Am I right or am I wrong?
Well, it's as Jesus says, not with the eyes of man does God see. There is no judgment by anybody but ourselves. And that has some interesting implications. There are people in the lowest level who feel very bad about something they did in life that you or I would easily forgive them for. But they can't forgive themselves, so they put themselves into this horrible place. It's like a garbage dump in winter with ravening dogs around you who actually are people. It's horrible. They put themselves there, and you can't get out without being rescued. On the other hand, and I've only read once about Hitler, so I'll just tell you anecdotally. The anecdote is that when he arrived in the Summerland, he had intensive counseling and help to try to get him to forgive himself, and that he managed to, whereas a lot of the guards in the concentration camp could not. And so they put themselves into the lower level, but he escaped it. That's an anecdote. I don't know if it's true.
Now, somebody that goes into the first level, when they reincarnate, do they make the choice
from there? The people in the lowest levels have to be rescued, and the rescue work is continuous. Because in reality, this is not real. Things we think we do here and things we think are done to us here are like the exercise equipment in the gym to strengthen your ability to love and your ability to forgive. But
that's
it's
beautiful.
Not a reality such that it has any real implications. You can't kill a mind. You can't do anything to anybody, really. It's all very different from what you and I think, because we're sort of under the delusion that this is all there is. This isn't. This is a tiny part of reality, and it's not even as real as the rest of reality.
No.
That goes along with, like, Course in Miracles, where they say that this is all an illusion.
Yeah.
All of this is just an illusion.
Right.
That follows kind of along in that concept.
That's right.
So you need to be in levels 3 through 5 before you can reincarnate?
Apparently so.
Okay.
If you're probably at level 5, you may not need to anymore. Understand?
Okay.
This isn't a thing we're marshaled and forced to do. Virtually everybody who we all have apparently repeated lifetimes, but they're all, because there's no such thing as objective time, they're all happening at the same time. All of our lifetimes are simultaneous. All of history is simultaneous. I don't understand it either, but that's what they tell us. And we choose to come back because we want to make spiritual progress, and life is easy there. You really can't. It's like, you know, unless you go to the gym, you can't get in shape. We want to get in spiritual shape so we can get to level 6. So we plan a life that's very difficult with people who will be in the life with us and our guides. We plan that life, and we're going to ace it out. You know, horrible things are going to be done to us or happen to us, but we're going to learn to love, and we're going to learn to forgive. We're going to get strong through this adverse things that happen here. And if more people understood that they planned this, whatever bad things are happening, they planned it.
Exactly.
And they planned it as a way to grow spiritually, I think we would sort of handle it better than we do.
Yeah, I've always heard that. And what's your take now on these suicides, these choice.
Assisted suicide.
That's what I thought it was, assisted suicide.
Well, there are a variety of things we're told about suicide. Again, remember, you're going to get there, you're going to go through a life review, you're going to realize you planned things into your life. Now, it seems that people who kill themselves as sub-adults, below maybe mid-20s or slightly younger, always forgive themselves. They're treated like royalty. There doesn't seem to be a problem for young people who kill themselves. There doesn't seem to be a problem for very old people who kill themselves either. They're just, you know, shortening by a bit their lives. People who are terminally ill, there doesn't seem to be a problem for them either. The people who have trouble forgiving themselves for killing themselves are those who planned difficult things into their lives, you know, sort of somewhere at midlife, and then they kill themselves instead of, you know, using that opportunity to grow spiritually. They tend to have a great deal of trouble forgiving themselves for that.
Wow. All right. Oh, gosh, I had a question. Go ahead, Judy Ann, because I just blanked out on it.
I was going more along that. I mean, with my studies, how I was taught and what I understand is that, and this goes along with what you said about choosing this difficult life, and someone comes in and they're blind and they're like a Helen Keller, but yet she took that and she really taught a lot of humanity with her experiences. But you'll get somebody...
Wonderful example. She's
yes.
blind and she's deaf. And she took those horrible challenges and surmounted them and triumphed. And so long after her death, we still remember her. I mean, what a wonderful example she was.
She is.
Great in this world. Great example.
So I look at someone like that, because the way I was always taught is you come in at a certain level. So say you're at a level 3. You can never go back down to a 2, no matter what you do, but you could go out and have never passed this level 3. That's the way
you
thought.
You easily can go lower. The problem is that it's all based upon your own rate of spiritual vibration. The better you are at loving and forgiving, the higher is your own spiritual vibratory rate. And you gravitate to the highest level to which you are suited. So that if you are a very good person at loving and forgiving and very sweet and all of the good things you've learned well on Earth, you could be a level 4 or a level 5 person.
Oh, that's when you're on the
other
side.
Then if you have a lifetime, if you then go out and have another lifetime in which, you know, you screw up some things, you could find yourself that you have lowered your own vibratory rate by your inability to forgive yourself for those mistakes.
So that's interesting, because that goes against... Like, that goes against things that I've been taught. That's very interesting. How did you come about that information?
We have nearly 200 years, well, it's about 170 years, of abundant and consistent communication from the dead. And
okay.
They tell us these things. And it's pretty, I mean, I've read hundreds and hundreds of these communications. What's astonishing is that even though they tell us different things, everything is consistent. I've never found an outlier. And I've done this research, have come to the same conclusions I have, which is great. Whenever I meet them, we complete each other's sentences. It's all about learning to love and forgive and perfecting one's ability to do that. That seems to be the only reason the universe exists, is our playground, our school for learning to love and forgive. It's not, nothing about it is mechanical. It's all energy. And
right. It's
frankly spiritual energy. And spiritual energy can vary. You know, it's not typical that people will reach a higher level and then fall back, but it is possible if they don't always keep, you know, loving and forgiving and forgiving especially. The reason to learn to forgive here is you're going to have an opportunity to forgive yourself after you die, and that's not easy. So flexing your forgiveness muscle is really important so you can do it easily for yourself.
It becomes, it's learned, I guess, here so that you can effectively, when you sit in that movie theater with your life flashing, panoramic view of your life, every smile, every dirty look, everything, flashes before you, so that when you judge yourself, you're able to forgive yourself also.
problem is you will be able to feel how you made everybody feel, good or bad.
Oh.
And the people who've been through it say the hard part wasn't the stuff that they knew they had done wrong, because they were prepared for that. The hard part was seeing how many times they had carelessly hurt somebody's feelings, or they had not helped somebody they could easily have helped, or just little things they had done that had been cruel. They had a lot of trouble forgiving themselves for those things. We're very, very rigorous judges of ourselves, because we know what we meant. We planned this life as an opportunity to get to shoot right up to level 6. And,
exactly.
And if we fall short of our own expectations, we can be ruthless judges. But there's a lot of help, a lot of counseling, so that we are not, you know, we're not told forgive yourself forever. We're loved, we're supported, we're told, you know, it's okay, everything is fine, everybody forgives you, you shouldn't worry about it. It's just that some people have a lot of trouble, you know, really forgiving themselves for these mistakes.
So where is, this might be an odd question, but like, where would Jesus fall into all of this?
What's very interesting about Jesus is that he told us things 2,000 years ago about God, reality, death, and the afterlife we could not have confirmed by any means until the 20th century and even into the 21st. Little things and big things. So I can prove to you that Jesus walked the earth 2,000 years ago knowing things that he only could know if he had been an extraordinarily advanced being who came to us with a message and a purpose from God. We can prove that now. We also can prove that Christian theology is incorrect. God has never judged anybody. There's no evidence whatsoever God has ever judged anyone, and there's no evidence whatsoever that Jesus died for sin. That's not why he came. He says in the Gospels, if you just read the Gospels, you really get what he came to do. He came to teach us, and he says that repeatedly. And he says, it's not easy. There's no get-out-of-hell-free card. It's hard. Be perfect as your heavenly Father is perfect. Strive to learn to love and to forgive. He told us all of this. It's extraordinary. In fact, that's why there's an appendix in each of my books, both The Fun of Dying and The Fun of Staying in Touch, which talks about the extraordinary correspondences between the things Jesus said and what the afterlife evidence shows us. It's amazing.
Wow. That's really fascinating. I would love to hear some more on that. I'm going to go ahead and give out the number if anybody wants to call that's listening.
Definitely.
The best number to call us at is 888-429-5471. And I encourage anybody listening that wants to call and ask Miss Roberta Grimes some questions. That would be awesome, or to share any kind of experience that you've had. So, Roberta, I'm going to go back to that question then, not so much about Jesus, but what are angels?
We are told that angels are beings of a different class than us. They don't,
okay.
They're sort of God's servants, or the servants of the source. They're some of them extraordinarily powerful. Gary Schwartz is experimenting in his laboratory. He's a terrific scientist at the University of Tucson, University of Arizona in Tucson, and he's experimenting in his laboratory with light photons, and which the dead then give off. And when an archangel came into his light photon detector, it went off the charts. They're extraordinarily powerful.
Wow!
But they're all benevolent. They're not. There's no fallen angel. There doesn't seem to be any possibility of a devil. As I determine, it would defy the physics that we're coming to understand is true of psychic and spiritual energy anyhow, but there doesn't seem to be any evidence of it. Lots of evil, no question. Nasty beings exist.
But that was my next question for you. You jumped ahead. Go ahead.
Yeah, they're all created by people, and some of them are people who basically, for example, one of the reasons I'm so against capital punishment is what you do when you kill someone who is not a very advanced person anyway, and who is at the height of fear and anger, and you kill him, you basically free a very negative energy to the world who can do a great deal of mischief. And that's me. There's no earthly reason to do that if we just keep them in prison.
So you're saying that it actually releases negative energy? into the world when you actually do capital punishment?
Their mind can't be killed. You can kill the body, but the body basically has imprisoned this negative mind. So what you do is you rev up everything negative about it, and then you free it. Why would anybody do that? It's insane. It's like, talk about pollution. That's the worst possible pollution.
Like a bomb.
Kind of like psychic pollution.
And, I mean, what we should be doing is trying to help them grow spiritually, because they are every bit our brothers and sisters. So we should be helping them. We certainly shouldn't be killing them and causing additional harm, because they can possess. I don't like some of the stuff I've learned, but this is just the truth. People who have weakened auras, weakened defensive systems, can be possessed by the spirits of negative entities.
Okay.
Who can then do a tremendous amount of mischief and harm.
So then you do believe that people can be, they can open themselves up to taking on entities, these negative entities.
Oh, no question. And sometimes it's quite inadvertent. For example, people, you know, very young children who are in hospitals are at great risk of that because their auras are weakened. People who, if you get drunk in a bar or do drugs in an alley where a lot of people have done drugs, you can very well pick up either a dead, someone who is addicted to alcohol or a dead addict.
That's exactly.
And once you do that, it's all impossible to get rid of them, because and they make you crave like you cannot imagine whatever it is they're craving.
Yes.
Wow.
That I know. I agree 100% with that.
Well, shouldn't we know this stuff? Because then we can protect ourselves. That's the problem. Because mainstream science is so clueless, we don't get common sense advice about how to protect ourselves. It's tragic, really.
So let me ask you this. These entities that can come in and take possession and do all that stuff, are they... What have they just not crossed over? Are they on the first level? What is the source?
They're what are called earthbound.
Okay.
There are a variety of kinds of sort of ways that we can become earthbound. One of them is by deliberate choice. And people who die addicted to anything, the typical addictions are alcohol, drugs, and sex. Any of those addictions, people tend to want to stay here and satisfy these cravings, but of course they don't have a body with which to satisfy these cravings.
So they try
to possess a body of somebody else if they can get in, which they can get in. If you get drunk, you sort of tatter your energy defenses, and they can get in.
That's fascinating.
And if you know someone who sort of was a drunkard and suddenly now he's much worse, he probably has one or more entities in there, you know, driving him to drink.
You could almost see it when you're looking at someone that is that drunk or the drugs.
Yeah.
There's a look about the eyes. My father had it when he was really drinking. There's sort of a strange, almost greenish look about the way their eyes look. It's hard to describe. There's like a greenish light there.
It's almost like
you gave it up, and pretty soon he was fine.
Yes.
Go ahead, Judy.
You kind of look into the eyes and you see emptiness. It's like no one's really home, but yet this other energy exists. That other person is completely gone. That's why when people talk about people on drugs or if it's alcohol or even sexual addiction, they don't feel it's this person that they knew anymore, because it isn't. It isn't.
There's somebody else in there driving the vehicle.
Someone else. Yeah, and you know, I get this visual of the other person who has gone, and they've shrunk to the size of not even barely a quarter of an inch, and they're in there yelling, "Help, help!" And the other one is so vast and has taken them over. That's the feeling I get with that. Right there. They need a release.
So how do you get rid of someone like that?
The only way to do it is to stop the drugs or stop the drinking altogether. If you stop the behavior, you can sometimes drive them out.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because they're attracted to the behavior.
They don't care about you. They're attracted to the behavior.
They don't care about you.
That's right.
The host. You're a host.
Right.
And I think they keep trying to pull you back as you're trying to get away from it. They'll keep trying to.
Yes.
They don't want to leave.
I had a friend who had one. She had been a waitress in a bar, and she ended up with a terrible problem with one in particular. She actually knew its name. I don't know how she did that. But she ended up not only having to stop drinking, but she would look in the mirror and look into her own eyes and tell it to get out. And eventually it did. But it was it's a nasty thing. I don't like this stuff. And I'm a researcher. I'm not psychic. I'm not mystic. I'm not, you know, New Age. I'm none of that. This is serious stuff. But when you have overwhelming evidence of these things and everyone's ignoring it, and if it fits all the other evidence we have, it has to do with what reality actually is. You know, you want to say to people, wait a minute, let's look at maybe fixing problems in a way that's actually going to work. Like post-traumatic stress disorder. There's someone who can help Vietnam War veterans who are some of them carrying 7, 8 or more dead Americans and Vietnamese and have carried them for their whole lives. If they can get those beings to go to the light, they've cured the veteran who's suffered with this all his life.
That's true. And giving them drugs is not the answer.
No,
all you do is suppress
the spirit even more.
Right.
So is there something that a suffering?
It's the others as well.
So is there something that a healer could help them with then to help those entities release and get done besides just quitting the drugs or the alcohol?
Well, no. If it's an addict that's possessing you, you've got to quit whatever the substance is or the activity is. If it's someone who was in a war, people who are in war, and people are dying around them. Those people dying are at the height of this emotional, hatred, anger, fear, all of these things, and what they jump into because if you're in the same state, you have a weakened aura as well. They jump into another soldier and keep fighting. And they keep fighting for years. That's why sometimes these guys will just lose it and kill people and then say, I don't know what came over me. Well, what came over him was that carrying around somebody who's still fighting a war that's been over for decades.
Wow.
It brings to mind, and I don't know if this is valid or anything, but I always remember back in the time of Son of Sam, he kept saying he was hearing someone who said, kill, kill. And I think that was the case. It was a possession.
Right. Well, that was my next question. Was someone with schizophrenia that we diagnosed as schizophrenia?
A number of mental illnesses are actually forms of possession. You have some sort of genetic or other predisposition to allowing these creatures in. And a lot of the symptoms of schizophrenia seem to mimic what we would think would be symptoms of spirit possession.
Yes. Exactly.
And I think that's what it is. You're right.
And in most of those instances, say it's a child, they take the child and they get a psychiatric evaluation and they give them drugs and they just make it easier and easier for more to possess the child. Or you have someone that I've had enough with this and then they go and they look for some sort of outside source that's not mainstream and they find more answers.
The problem is that mainstream science, that includes all the sciences, including medicine, has as a fundamental dogma, and they actually use the term, atheism. Therefore, anything that smacks of anything remotely spiritual, they won't go there. Now, that's like saying, I am going to study a room, but I'll only study floors. I don't care about the rest of it. I'm going to find all my solutions in what the floor is. Well, you can't. You've got to look at the whole thing. I do a podcast on iTunes. Just if people look for Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes, they're called Seek Reality because I have guests on all my podcasts, which are people who are experts in all these fields, and we just talk about this stuff. And we've got 100-some-odd thousand people now who just subscribe to these podcasts just because people want to know. Yes, let's all seek reality now, because obviously science doesn't give us the answers anymore. Religion can't do it either. But there is a reality which both of them can give us and shed light on, and the core of where we sort of start to look at that reality turns out to be what the dead tell us. They have a much better perspective than we do on what's going on.
Well, I'll tell you, coming from the scientific perspective, because that's where I come from on this stuff. And I will tell you, the things that you're saying, which are the things that I believe also, they will get you laughed out of the room. They,
of course.
Scientists, there are many scientists that are very open-minded, but the vast majority, if they can't see it, touch it, feel it, taste it, smell it, or some way detect it, then it doesn't exist. And that,
yeah,
that never,
you're right.
My whole life, intuitively, that made no sense to me. You can't prove a negative, so that just never makes sense.
One-on-one, a lot of them know that this is, a lot of them are coming to understand that the mind is not generated by the brain, which is basic
yes.
stuff. They're coming to understand that there's probably something going on within dark matter, which makes up 27% of the universe. I mean, all of this effort the scientists are putting forth is to study less than 5% of the universe, what's matter and energies of the conventional sort. 95% of it is dark matter and, quote, dark energy, and they call them dark only because they don't interact with material light. Yeah, the proportions are about right. I think dark matter is probably the afterlife level. 27%
wow.
as opposed compared to 5%. It's there. And if you read science magazines, you start to see them saying, maybe there's stuff inside that we ought to study.
Right.
Yeah, there is. And it's our loved ones.
Well, and they're searching right now for this, you know, the supposed God particle. They're desperate
to find some
explanation for all this, when in fact, it kind of defies a scientific explanation at this point. We don't have the tools to explain it scientifically.
The problem they have is that there is nothing solid. If you drill down to the tiniest subatomic particle, it's nothing but energy. And
if only
energy exists, how the heck does gravity work? Where does mass come from? That's what the God particle, the Higgs boson, is supposed to do. So they think mm-hmm. they found it. Now they have no idea how it works.
Yeah, that's it's funny you said that, because that's true.
You know,
I think it's...
But there are at least 30 other particles that they were trying to find with the Great Hadron Collider, which have been assumed for the past, 30, 40 years in all their calculations and trying to come up with a unified theory of physics that unifies quantum physics and Newtonian physics. They haven't found one of those particles. They don't exist. The only unified theory possible is a consciousness theory of everything. And that's something which is going to be the physics that will be discovered in this century. That's the next stage of physics. And we found it now.
Yes.
I mean, mm-hmm. it's what unifies everything, is consciousness. That's all that... And Max Planck, who got the 1918 Nobel Prize for quantum physics, he said it. He said consciousness is primary and pre-existing. It pre-exists the universe.
Absolutely.
Human consciousness. He said it. Mm-hmm. But they ignored that. He should have gotten the Nobel Prize for that.
Definitely.
Well, things are shifting. People are becoming more aware. People are not satisfied with the standard explanations that they're given anymore. They want more. That's evidenced by just the shift in my lifetime. I'm, you know, in my 50s, and it's been huge. It's been huge. And if you think about that little 20 years or 30 years, I mean, that's just a little blip in the time, and how much has changed just in that time. So it's a fascinating time to be learning about this stuff and to be talking about it. I don't know. I think it's just
talking
amazing.
Talking about it. But you know, mm-hmm. too, is look at the programming on just regular TV. Most of it is mystical and afterlife and these beings. I mean, you got your little situation comedies, but everything has a theme connected to it, to what's going on. So I think everything is shifting, and it's changing. It's just, I think it's exciting, whereas a lot of people are still hidden.
Very fast.
And I truly believe the people that poo-poo all of this and are those who are just so afraid, because if you change your belief, you have to open up to something else, and they want to remain in that box, and it's easier to, you know, make fun of people like us than it is to open up, because I've met so many people, and some people secretly come and they, well, I've been doing this, and they are scientists, but that's maybe one. I did an event with the American General Chemistry Council. In the whole 3 hours that I was there, there was only one person. But he sat with me all night, and we talked about all of this. I was happy because this is my favorite subject. I can go on and on and on. But it's just, it's good that the rest of the world is catching up. That's what I'm happy about.
Well, and I think it requires... go ahead, Roberta. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry to interrupt you. I was just agreeing and saying it's really just starting now. It's happening fast,
yes.
And it's
yes.
fun to be, you're right. It's so much fun to be part of it, even to just be an observer of it. It's great.
Well, and all I was going to say was just that I think for people that really resist this, they don't want to give up the control. They're so...
Well, it is control.
They don't want to give up the control for the thought of the unknown. I mean, that's a very scary place for a lot of people to be in. I personally think it's very cool. I want to learn as much as I can. So.
Oh, me too. I mean, it's an addictive thing to study. And
yes.
It's such a, because it's a whole new science, a whole new way of looking at reality, you never come to an end. I'm always learning interesting new things. I just got Victor Zammit does a newsletter. People can sign up at Victor Zammit, ZAMMIT.com. It's a free newsletter. It comes on Thursday night in the United States. It's he's Australian. It's fascinating. He gives all kinds of little new tidbits and films and things, cutting-edge stuff in this field. It's just like candy. It's wonderful.
Wonderful.
Can you give the address one more time?
Victor, VictorZammit.com. Victor and Wendy put out this newsletter every week. It is the best news you'll read all week. It's full of all this, these wonderful tidbits and cutting-edge stuff going on in this field. They're right on the top of it. I'm in awe of them myself.
Well, and then I'm aware, have you heard of a blog called Channeling Eric?
No.
Okay, that's another one that's kind of interesting. It's just like a blog.
Who's Eric?
It's just,
I never heard of it either.
Yeah, it's actually very interesting.
Who is Eric?
Pardon? Say that again?
Who is Eric?
Okay, so basically, I'll just give you a real quick nutshell. The lady that started the blog, she's a doctor, and she was an atheist, and her son committed suicide when he was, I want to say a teenager. I think maybe 16, 17, I'm not sure exactly. And he started coming to her, and she basically transcribes everything that that the mediums, basically every bit of the session, she transcribes it and she puts it on this blog, and she answers people's questions. People write her all these questions, and then she talks to her son, and he gives her the perspective from the other side. And pretty much everything you're saying is what he says. I'm shocked at how close
there
it is.
There are a number of these, and everybody is saying the same thing because it's one truth. But Mikey Morgan died at the age of 20, and he's a level 6 being. I'm not at all credulous. I didn't believe a word of this until he started answering questions. His mother knows nothing about this stuff, and she learned to communicate with him by pendulum. And I've seen him answer hundreds of questions. He's never, ever made a mistake. It's 100% what has taken me a lifetime to learn. This 20-year-old kid who's actually a level 6 being, he knows it all. I'm helping him now. It'll come out next year. Oh, it's extraordinary. I don't just believe in him. I'm confident he is what he says he is. He says he's a very advanced teacher in level 6 who decided to have a brief life on Earth again, and he worked out with his mother that he would come back. Die at 20, that was his last exit point. We all plan exit points in two or three of them. That was his last one. And so that he could communicate through her and help with the shift, help with what's happening now. So,
he's
a 20-year-old kid, and he talks and acts like one, but on the other hand, you ask him a question about this stuff, and he's right on. He's taught me things. Very few people can do that now after I've spent a lifetime doing this. Well, so, yeah, there are a bunch of kids working with us, I must say.
Definitely. We're getting the signal now that we have just 1 minute left. We're going to have you back.
Absolutely.
Again, because this can go, this can go on and on forever. I mean,
it's great.
Like a day. It's like it's happiness for me to talk about this.
Oh, me too. No, I love this. And in case anyone's interested, my website is robertagrimes.com. And
okay.
My books are there, and my blog is there. Please read my blog. I put a lot of effort into it.
I do.
And it's just a feast of information for all of us. If we talk to the right people and we connect with the right people, there's no end to the learning. It's a wonderful, wonderful thing.
We're going to get cut, but we want to thank you so much. It's been such a pleasure, and we definitely will be in touch because we're going to have you back because this is not even part. I mean, we haven't even done part one. We haven't even completed this. We're like in the hallway of where we want to go. We haven't even begun. So we want to thank you once again. I put all the information up on the site, and I posted it to all my Facebook pages about you. So. Anyone who wants to talk to you or to more like read your books and read your blog, it's right there. So we want to thank you again.
Thank you so much, Roberta. We will definitely have you on as a guest again.
Okay, Roberta. Take care.
That's great.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.